Good Sunday morning, and welcome to Hot Topics, a presentation of Hot 99.5's Community Affairs Department on Duval's Only R&B. Here's Julie Morgan.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Julie Morgan. We're going to pick up where we left off last week on the topic of mental health. If you missed last week's show, feel free to go to our website to take a listen, myhot995.com, click on Hot Cares, and then you'll see a link for Hot Topics. I'm joined by Dr. Andy King with the University of North Florida. Let's pick up where we left off. What if it comes to the point where that person needs more than just a talking to or a talking with?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What if you need medical help?
That's where we start working as a team. So within the counseling centers at the university, we have counselors, we have group counseling, and then we have psychiatric support. So a student who needs more intense treatment, they might see a counselor, they might be part of a group counseling process, and they might be meeting with either a psychiatrist or a psychiatric nurse practitioner for medication. So that kind of intense treatment is they're having multiple appointments throughout the month, addressing the issue from multiple perspectives. Now, there are some agencies that provide what's called intensive outpatient treatment, and this is where the person receiving treatment are at that agency 2, 3, maybe 4 times a week for hours at a time. So they'll be in group counseling for a solid 90 minutes, and then they might meet individually. They might be engaged in a daily activity. So they're out of the house and they're engaged in art therapy. Right now at UNF, we have an art therapist. And one of the things we do is we have 2 days a week for 2 hours each day. We have an open art therapy studio. So students literally can walk in. They do an art project that has a level of therapeutic value to it. And we kind of guide them through it. And then they walk out. It's just an adjunct to helping people maybe understand themselves a little better, lower their stress level. So sometimes this is about stress management, but in those cases where it's debilitating, you know, that's where we're doing more intensive, more intentional treatment, and there's more professionals involved sometimes.
All of that just brought up so many questions for me. Okay, let's go back to the medication part. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that I look at medication and I just think back to something that happened to a friend of mine. Could it possibly be bad?
Yes. And I'll give you the kind of the best example. So a person appears depressed. Their behavior is depressed. They're not doing all those things that ordinarily they would do. Let's say they know someone who's taking Prozac or a common antidepressant, otherwise known as a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, or SSRI. It's a whole class of antidepressants. Then there's lots of different ones. The person says to himself, well, clearly I'm depressed, so I'm going to take my friend's Prozac or Zoloft or Wellbutrin or whatever, and they take it. And then all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, over a period of time, as they continue to take it, they become more energized, but now more agitated. And now they start thinking, you know, that's okay. I could take my mortgage payment this month and get to Vegas. I could quadruple that, and I could be back in town by Sunday. Okay, so what has happened in this case is the person is actually, the actual diagnosis, not known to all of us, is they are bipolar, and they were in a depressive phase. You gave them an antidepressant, and you pushed them into a manic phase, but you didn't know they were bipolar because no one did the assessment. So that's why giving medication is not our first response. Our first response is doing a comprehensive history, doing some assessment, and starting off with talk therapy, because rarely has that ever backfired. If anything, it's benign. It usually shows improvement. So when we do studies, talk therapy has shown good effect. When that's not enough, adding medication has shown good effect. There are some instances where medication alone has the desired effect, but the large part of success is either talk therapy in some format or talk therapy and medication together. But because We don't know how a unique individual is going to react to a specific drug. That's not our go-to first. First, we do that assessment.
Because, I mean, I've heard that holding in your feelings is not good for your health.
Right. Yeah, true.
And mentally either.
Right. Oh, yeah. I think sometimes, you know, sometimes people don't realize this, but when we think about things, there's no less than three components to it. We can think about something, we can feel about it, and we usually do something about it. So there's thoughts, there's feelings, there's behaviors, and those interact. So if you're feeling a certain way, it's about something, either about an event, about yourself, or some interaction, and you're always going to have thoughts about it, you're always going to have feelings about it, but you don't know necessarily if they're accurate. If you grow up in a world where people tell you, don't cry. Men get that message, don't cry. Little, you know, boys don't cry, men don't cry. Well, if they're sad, if they've had a major loss, crying's kind of appropriate. But if you don't do that, then you ignore it and it goes somewhere. The way, one of the reasons why talk therapy works is when we remember an incident, we're not playing it again like we would do on our iPod. We actually reconstruct the memory. We actually have to think and reconstruct the memory. So we start to process these thoughts. And when we start talking about them, we actually start using different parts of our brain to understand what's going on. And so what I find is if someone is not sure about something, I say, listen, next time you're in the shower, it's just you in the shower and the water is falling and it's nice and warm and you're sitting there, ask yourself, how do you feel? How do you feel? How do you feel? You got to know what you're feeling. You got to know what you're thinking before you know what you're going to start doing. And so I really encourage people to use talk therapy because it forces them to use actually a different part of their brain to process the information, to process the thoughts and process the feelings. They talk about Wernicke's area and Broca's area, our language centers. When you use a part of your brain that you maybe don't ordinarily use, to the result you get is different. And so sometimes when we can think about our feelings differently, we have a different perspective and we might still be sad, but we're not depressed. A depressed person can't do anything about what they're feeling. A sad person can.
On a final note, something that I thought about, how has social media had an impact on our feelings and how we feel about ourselves, and in turn, that could just lead us down a really bad road?
Oh, yeah. I think the classic example is you're on Facebook. And from my understanding, Facebook has an older audience. Instagram has a younger audience. I am not the expert on that. But anyway, I'll use Facebook for example. So on Facebook, people are posting things that are going well in their life. You know, pretty pictures, happy events, celebrations, lots of positive things. Well, if I'm following all my friends who are posting all of that, I'm comparing what they want to show me, the good stuff they want to show me, to all of me. And there are a lot of positive things going on in my life, but it's not all positive, just like everybody else. So I start to compare all of me, which includes a bunch of negative stuff, to just the positive side of all these other people. And I start to feel like, oh my God, I'm doing terrible. But I'm really not. So social media gives us false images and a false perception of what it really is like out there.
And it seems like that's something that you would run into a lot on a college campus, if you just think about it.
Right. I have seen budding romantic relationships get derailed by texting. Because when you text someone, it's not a discussion. There's no nonverbal cues. You can't see their face. You don't know if they're joking. You don't know how they said that word. And so there's all this communication. And when you're trying to get a romantic relationship going, which is a fairly sophisticated relationship, I'm not just buying a pizza here, mm-hmm. you know, it really requires face-to-face time and doing things together. So not just watching a movie together, but, you know, playing a game together, taking a walk together, lots and lots of talking. And you can't do it on social media. You can't do it electronically. You've got to do it face-to-face. So since one of the life tasks of your standard college student is who's going to be a good partner for me, you know, this is kind of a critical life task. And I would encourage people, not that I don't think you can't find a person who might match up, but the real work of getting that relationship on solid footing comes with spending time with them. I've been married for 20 years, and I was married pre-text and pre-social media, but it can trip me up if I say something, meaning something in a text, but it's interpreted because there's no context to those little words that I typed into my phone. So I'd be very mindful of if a relationship is important to you, you'll get off your phone, you'll go to where they are, and you'll spend an hour or two doing something together, cooking together, you know, playing games together, watching something you enjoy together, reading a book together, talking about whatever you read or watched and did together. That's what builds the foundation for a solid relationship.
Dr. King, so many more things we could talk about today. Please tell everyone your website.
Our website is www.unf.edu/counseling-center. You can just go to the university website, unf.edu, and type in search for Counseling Center. You can like us on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on Pinterest. We even have a Spotify channel. So if you like us on one of those social medias, you'll be getting very positive notices and things like our open therapy or our open art therapy group, as well as other services. And for those who don't go to UNF, if you go to JU, if you go to some other college, they have comparable systems. I also like to remind people there are national hotlines. It says suicide hotline, but that counselor is going to be happy to talk to you about whatever you want to talk about. I encourage the hotlines or the helplines first versus the chats on the web, because sometimes a person will get on a chat site, they'll be in line versus, you know, getting on the phone. So I'm a big fan of getting on the phone first before getting on some kind of website that's just a chat website.
That's like that face-to-face almost communication that you were
mentioning. Yeah. Phone is better. Phone is better.
Phone is better. Well, Dr. King, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
No, and I thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
When we return, we're going to switch gears totally. We're going to talk about tax reform. For this, I'll be joined by a professor with FSCJ.
Hot 99.5, keeping you up to date with what's happening in the community. This is Hot Topics on Hot 99.5.
Tax reform is something that has been in the political arena for a while now. This is not a show about politics, but this is a show about tax reform and what it means for you. Does it mean anything for the taxes you're filing this year, or does it mean something different? What if you're married with two kids? How will tax reform affect you? When will these changes take effect? Today, I'm joined by Professor Neil Schreiber. He's a CPA and a professor of accounting at the School of Business at Florida State College at Jacksonville. This is part one of our show. Part two airs next week, so make sure you return. Professor Schreiber, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Julie. Glad to be here.
So we're talking about tax reform today, and we're talking about people's money. One thing I like to help my listeners understand is the background of the person I'm speaking to, especially when it comes to their health or their wallet. Right. And we're talking about their wallet today. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
I have the honor of being a CPA. That's a certified public accountant for almost a quarter century. It's hard to say that now. It's been way over 20 years ago that I earned my CPA. I have had the great opportunity to attend wonderful institutions of learning, University of Florida, University of Texas, Austin. Have had the opportunity to work for wonderful corporations such as Cox, owns your station as well.
Yeah.
Worked in many, many aspects of financial accounting, managerial accounting, taxation, broad spectrum of accounting. And right now I'm thoroughly enjoying every day going to FSCJ and working with my students.
Let's get right into this topic.
Please.
I look at it and I've read so much information, but it still comes out as a different language to me. So I'm glad to have you on my show. Overall, we look at tax reform. Will employees see more in their paycheck?
Yes. Employees will see more in their paycheck. The real effects are already being seen as a result of this tax reform. There are hundreds of companies in the country that are issuing bonuses, providing raises way above minimum wage to their employees as base hourly wages. We're seeing companies choose to take their tax savings and employ them towards workforce training, towards hiring more employees, but also helping employees with their retirement accounts, being able to put funds not from the employee's wallet, but the employer themselves putting that money into retirement savings for their workers.
But let's talk about the average person. Let's say that I'm single and I make, say, $35,000 a year. How is this going to help me?
As an individual, the tax rates have changed. There is more income that will be taxed at lower rates. The benefit of that is less dollars going out of your wallet into the federal government, more stays in your wallet. So if you are a single parent, let's say one child, you're going to save about $1,000, $1,200 a year in federal taxes as a result of this reform. That's $100 a month. There's a lot of things that $100 can be spent towards additionally every month.
But I'm thinking about this and I'm looking at it. I say, are these changes temporary?
There's a lot of differences of opinion in the news about this. There were talk about sunset provisions when the sun goes down and we revert back to old laws. I look at that and kind of forget about it in a sense. The Constitution says that each Congress can't bind a future Congress. Right now, if our Congress folks wanted to, they could make more changes to the tax law, make these things permanent. I think they're trying to get a sense of how it's going to work. It's been working out very well so far in the few weeks that we've had the new law. But in 8 years, that's a few administrations from now, a few new Congresses from now, I do not foresee, and this has been the case in the past, Congress saying, we're going to let the taxes go back the way that they were.
So it's not something that I should really think about, consider it now. I should think about what's happening right now to my paycheck.
Right now, there are benefits that you're going to start seeing in your paycheck beginning in February. The IRS takes a little bit of time once the law is passed for to update paperwork, let employers know, here's the new amounts that need to be withheld from employees' paychecks. And in paychecks beginning in February, we should all see increases as a result of this tax reform.
Does the tax reform change the healthcare mandate?
Actually, it does. Not for this year, though. For 2017, the year we just finished, and the year we're currently in, 2018, you have choices. You either join a healthcare program at your company. If your company doesn't offer that, you are required under the Affordable Care Act to either purchase from a government source of insurance, a government marketplace. If you choose not to do that, there's a penalty that you pay along with your taxes. Beginning January 1st of 2019, that purchase mandate is no longer in effect, which means you don't have a penalty if you don't have insurance. If you don't want to, you don't have to buy from the government marketplace. And if you don't want to, you don't have to join the insurance program at the company you work for.
How do corporate tax changes help us as individuals?
Well, let's take the word corporation and break it into different types of businesses.
Okay.
The first, let's look at the very large businesses that we all know, the AT&Ts, Comcast, CSX, those sort of publicly traded large companies. Their rates gone down by 14%. before this tax reform, we were, as the United States of America, taxing our corporations higher than pretty much any other country. The reduction from 35 down to 21% opens up a lot of dollars available to these companies. And the companies have choices how to utilize those dollars. Now, there's been a lot of economic studies, finance studies, accounting studies that say when you raise the corporate tax rate, about half of the dollars that are going out from the corporation are coming from workers, either in terms of lower wages, less raises, less hiring. So the reverse we would hope would be true by reducing the tax rate, more people being hired, raises for folks who are currently working. And we're actively seeing that. There are many large companies that are issuing bonuses, adding to employees' retirement accounts out of the corporate pocket, not out of the employee's pocket. We're seeing additional hiring. There's employers around the country that are also issuing bonuses to all of their employees, not management. We're talking all employees. So companies are investing those dollars in their people from what we've seen so far. Other types of companies are family-owned or individually-owned, smaller companies that are classified as corporations. This could be your local restaurant, barber shop, your auto repair place. There's different structures. That's more legal, but they qualify as corporations. The money that the business makes, they flows through to the individual. There's not considered a separation between the two. So that's taxed as their own personal income at pretty high rates. The rates now on that income earned by the business have been significantly reduced. So for many, many folks in Jacksonville that own their own business, they should see their tax bill go down dramatically this year. More money in their pocket means more opportunity to hire more people, give their people raises, maybe expand their business. And one of the nice things about expanding businesses, building new construction, employs construction workers, and many other folks in town. There's a lot of other ancillary jobs that can be created.
I never actually thought about small business owners and how they would be affected in terms of the way you said that it's actually like it's their, the money made by the business is actually, it's their money, but it's taxed higher.
It is taxed at a higher rate. Yes, it was before the new tax reform came into place.
This is just part one in a two-part series about tax reform. Please join us next week. If you missed any of this show, go to our website, myhot995.com, and click on I Cares. In the meantime, if you have any questions about taxes, of course, you can go to the IRS website, irs.gov. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Hot Topics on Hot 99.5. Hot Topics is a presentation of Hot 99.5's Community Affairs Department. For more information about the program you just heard, visit myhot995.com, then click on Hot Cares. And join us again next Sunday morning at 6:30 a.m. for another edition of Hot Topics on Duval's only R&B, the new Hot 99.5.